Everybody always says, oh, you're an archaeologist. Have you been to Egypt? And I say, yes, I worked there for 10 years. Yeah. And they're, whoa! And I'm like, but guess what? Arkansas archaeology is just as amazing.
Hi, everyone. I'm Greg Harton, and this is Speaking of Arkansas. The voice you heard as we kicked off this podcast is Dr. Mel Zabecki of the University of Arkansas Archaeological Survey. She also happens to be the state archaeologist. Until recently, I didn't even know we had a state archaeologist, so I was intrigued to visit with her. So what better time to do that than Arkansas Archaeology Month? This celebration of archaeology happens every March, with the goal of broadening the public's interest and appreciation for conservation and preservation. I'll include with notes on this podcast a link to the Archaeological Survey's monthly calendar. It features programs at locations across the state all month long, so check it out. Dr. Mel Zabecki is from Fayetteville. She earned a PhD from the University of Arkansas in 2009 and previously served as the Arkansas Archaeological Survey's Education Outreach Coordinator starting in 2018. She became the state archaeologist in 2021. She's also been an interpreter at Parkin Archaeological State Park, about 30 miles west of Memphis, and spent several years doing work in Egypt. Here's my interview with Dr. Zabecki.
Dr. Zabecki, I'm very glad to get a chance to visit with you today.
Thanks for having me, Greg. I appreciate being here.
So I want to visit with you about current archaeological work in Arkansas, trends that you see developing in the world of archaeology, how someone might realize a job in this arena is perfect for them, maybe, and also some of the challenges that threaten the historical record and frustrate archaeological efforts in Arkansas to document history. So why are you an archaeologist in Arkansas?
Let's scratch off the Arkansas part. Why am I an archaeologist? Just like everybody else, I was obsessed with ancient Egypt when I was 8 years old. I had a brief decision that I was either going to be a sticker store owner or an archaeologist when I grew up. And and then I kind of forgot about it. Over the years, I just... I didn't know anthropology existed, and anthropology is where archaeology comes from. I missed the whole point that Indiana Jones was a professor. I thought you had to be, really rich or something to become an archaeologist. So I kind of just didn't forget about it, but I didn't think it was a possibility. And when I went to college, I thought I was going to do environmental science or something like that. I just liked being outside and looking at things and discovering rocks and things like that. But then I actually had to take an anthropology class as a social science requirement, and I learned that archaeology was actually a sub-discipline of anthropology. So that set me on a complete, I completely turned around and took every single class I could. By the way, I wasn't just obsessed with ancient Egypt, I was obsessed with ancient Egyptian mummies. So I started to learn skeletal biology and learned about bones and just what we call osteology. And then I went for my junior year abroad in Egypt and completed an entire Egyptology minor and learned so much and made a lot of connections that I was able to go back there after I got my bachelor's. My undergrad advisor said, what do you want to do with your life? I said, I want to dig up dead ancient Egyptians. And he said, well, you got to go work with Jerry Rose at the University of Arkansas. So I came here to work with Jerry Rose at the University of Arkansas, and he advised me all through the master's and the PhD, and we worked together for many years in Egypt at different sites and cemeteries. And I just went through this. It was the most amazing life, and it was a lot of fun and really interesting to travel, learning Arabic and learning how the cultural ways are in modern Egypt and learning so much about ancient Egypt. And then eventually, I really got tired of living just season to season trying to get over there. And I was only adjunct instructing at universities, and it was soul crushing, no benefits and stuff like that. So that's how I ended up at Parkin Archaeological State Park as an interpreter. When I applied for the job, the superintendent said, you're not going to be digging, right? I see you have a PhD. And I said, no, I don't care. I just want to talk about archaeology and I don't have to be doing it. So that's where I learned about Arkansas archaeology. So I didn't know a thing about Arkansas archaeology or North American archaeology for that matter until I got that job at Parkin, which was in 2012. So I'm only 11 years into Arkansas archaeology, but I've been an archaeologist for 26 or something like that. And I always go and say, you know, the Egyptians, sure, everybody always says, oh, you're an archaeologist, have you been to Egypt? And I say, yes, I worked there for 10 years. Yeah. And they're, whoa! And I'm like, but guess what? Arkansas archaeology is just as amazing. Because, you know, it's just that we don't have solid, you know, structures left behind. We have mounds, but that's about it. As far as above ground things.
Well, you were close to a pyramid in Memphis.
Exactly. Yep, exactly. I went there many times, a good Bass Pro.
Yeah.
But so anyway, there's not a lot of visual archaeology here for citizens to kind of see and partake in and wonder about, right? So it's a little bit harder of a sell, you know, to say, no, really, really, Arkansas has just as cool of history than as Egypt or any other place in the world.
What are the differences and similarities between an archaeologist, an anthropologist, a sociologist, a historian?
Mm-hmm. Well, they are, like you mentioned, they're very interconnected. The archaeologists are the ones that physically go out into the field and learn about the human past. Anthropologists, in a broad sense, study humanity, right? But when a person really calls himself an anthropologist, they're usually going to be a cultural anthropologist, studying modern ethnicities, modern cultures, and how people act nowadays. I always say the difference between sociology and anthropology is that sociology talks about the problems and anthropology celebrates the diversity. That's how because I've taught sociology as well, and all they talk about is like social problems and, you know, social institutions, but there's a lot of problematic stuff. But whereas anthropology and archaeology celebrates the diversity of humanity, whether it be anthropology with you know, modern living humans or archaeology with the past humanity.
Arkansas has had a state archaeologist since 1967. I'm sure I'm telling you nothing that you don't already know. Hester Davis was the state's first state archaeologist, and she held the post for 32 years.
I thought that
was amazing.
Yeah.
And I would assume that she set the stage for really what a state archaeologist does today. So tell us a little bit about what the state archaeologist does.
Yeah, Hester was and then there was Ann Early after her, so I'm the third state archaeologist, Arkansas state archaeologist. And she laid a huge road for how a lot of states wanted for their archaeological programs to be organized. But the state archaeologist in Arkansas does a completely different job than the state archaeologist in Oklahoma and the state archaeologist in Louisiana. We have a National Association of State Archaeologists, but when we get together, half of us are speaking a different language. A lot of state archaeologists are in what we call the State Historic Preservation Office. They're what we call the regulatory people. They tell people what to do, what's right and what's wrong, and, you know, as far as like work goes, not ethically. But I don't do that. That's the State Historic Preservation Office, or we call it the SHPO, is actually in Little Rock.
Yeah.
So they're a completely separate entity based in the government, whereas I am positioned at the Arkansas Archaeological Survey. The survey is a division of the University of Arkansas system. So I don't do compliance work, and I can't exactly sign off on if somebody's done the archaeology correctly or incorrectly. So it's a kind of a weird nebulous job. But it was, when going back to Hester, her and Bob McGimsey, who was the survey director for many years, they worked very closely together during a time in America where archaeology was finding its way. And it was finding its way into the scientific world, because archaeology just used to be like, ooh, let's go collect things for the museum, you know, and let's let everybody look at cool stuff. But then it turned into, really due to the National Historic Preservation Act that was passed in the 60s, it caused archaeologists to have to be much more accountable for what they were doing. So there was, of course, still research going on, but that's when That's when the compliance work happened, and they were also very aware of the site destruction. So they actually were working at a time when what we call public archaeology got its start. So with all of that, like that evolution going on, the survey where I work for was really influenced heavily by Bob and Hester's connections with the rest of what was going on in the nation, and where Arkansas still holds a famous program in that the way we're set up was very logical, even though other states don't have the same thing. Iowa is actually set up very similar to as us, but it was kind of a sort of a groundbreaking way to set things up, I guess. So
and what distinguishes that particular way of doing it?
The survey is a group of research archaeologists, and they do various types of field work, but they do a lot of research on collections that have already been dug up, and they also do a lot of educational outreach. So instead of, say, an archaeologist that's a professor, they go and teach their classes, and they might do their own research, but that's it. With the survey, our archaeologists actually do teach if they're close enough to university, and they do research, but they also are totally, the figurehead for archaeology in the surrounding counties that is in their territory. So we have an outreach part of our mission that most people don't have. To, you know, people, basically archaeology happens in the ivory towers, you know, a lot of time, and the message doesn't get shared with the public a lot. It just stays in all that gray literature, or people can't get a hold of it, or, you know, it's just too technical and stuff like that.
Sure.
So the survey has three missions: to study the Arkansas past, to protect and manage information about archaeology in Arkansas, and then the third part is to share what we learn with the people of Arkansas. And also what distinguishes it is that we have 10 research stations positioned around the state. So there's an archaeologist and typically an assistant at each one of those stations. And they, again, have territories where they have, like, you know, 10, 15 counties that they are not in charge of, but that they oversee, you know, any problems that are going on. They reach out to citizens, or citizens know to reach out to them. They keep track of just what's happening. So it's not like me, state archaeologist, has to keep up with every single find and every single project in Arkansas. The station archaeologists get to, you know, be really the main data collectors of everything that's going on in their territory.
How do they become aware of a place that they need to go investigate?
The station archaeologists,
right? Or you, or you know, just you know, how do you discover what that next project might be, mm-hmm. or an area of concern?
A citizen will call and say, "Hey, there's a mound getting leveled," mm-hmm. or "I found these artifacts here. Can you come check this out?" Now, a lot of archaeological sites have been known for a century. You know, people know where things are. And when the survey got started and we started, actually systematically recording sites, all of, you know, the landowners and stuff came out and divulged all the information. Here's what's on this site. Here's the stuff I collected from this site. And so we have all of the sites registered that we know of. But there's always things getting uncovered. You know, some construction happens and, oh, look, I found this. The thing about, I wanted to just point out quickly, because most people think that all archaeologists do all day long is dig, right? Because that's what you see, you know, in all the movies and everything. But it turns out that we actually, not just the survey, but typically in the U.S. now, we have started to look inwards and look at our own records, because, yeah, it's fun to dig. And so that's what everybody did for decades. And then they'd be like, oh, we dug it up, cool. Let's wash it and organize it. Oh, I want to go back out into the field. And then they would forget about it, and they would leave it and not finish the process. And the ethical thing to do is to get through everything, publish it, and then republish it to where the public can digest it as well. So do your analysis, do your technical paper, share it at professional meetings, and then also put it in a publicly digestible form as well. And that didn't happen for many, many, many years. Basically, what was happening is that the archaeologists would dig the stuff up and it would all be in their heads, and they would never put it down on paper, and then they would retire, and then they would like try to write stuff in retirement, but it never, and then they have to come back and look at the collections again, and technology has changed, and you know, this is decades worth of, so it's a huge problem. So we don't go out, we very rarely go out and do projects anymore. There's a big project that we do in the summer for 2 weeks to train avocational archaeologists. And like, you know, all of our station archaeologists, they sometimes have like small projects that they're working on to get a little bit more information about a specific topic, or if somebody asks them to look at something specifically, they might do a little bit. But the actual archaeology in Arkansas now is happening because of construction. And those are folks that we call contract archaeologists that go out and do that work. You know, our station archaeologists, they do have their own pet projects, but we don't like go out and do huge full-scale excavations anymore. It's expensive and it's unethical. Why dig it up unless you're going to publish it for, you know, and then move on?
Right.
So we do a lot of just looking at our old collections, go through those, try to finish up the old archaeologist projects.
Is there a sense that there's not that much left to be found out there?
No. There's always stuff that's going to be found. So there's a lot of farmland that's still being used now that, you know, was lived on for thousands of years previously, and all that stuff is getting plowed up. So that's like the 60s and 70s is when I think a lot of that stuff got hit and brought up. But I think there's still a lot of things to be found, because there is still a lot of natural land, and we've got enough mountains that you can't really necessarily farm on. I don't know if there were large villages on these big mountains, but there's still stuff to be found, even if it was temporary camps and things like that. I mean, give the example of what was just going on at Great House Springs, in between Fayetteville and Johnson and Taneytown.
Highway 112.
On Highway 112. You know, that was an interesting project. And they knew the site was there for a long time, but it never needed to be excavated because it was considered safe under that lawn. But now that they're putting the roundabout in, they knew they had to, you know, figure out, they had to mitigate it basically. So the Department of Transportation hired archaeologists to go out there and do the work. So, and they learned a lot. They didn't find giant, beautiful pots and the typical things you think of when you think of archaeology, but they did find a lot of very interesting information about that settlement, and it was very old. And so we don't have that many really, really old settlements. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of, you know, what they call Dalton points and Clovis points and stuff like that, but they're never in context because people pick them up and walk away and then forget where they found it, and then we don't have the... And plus, there wasn't like large permanent locations where folks were living back then. But this one was one of those very old locations that people were living at, or at least, you know, at least seasonally, but returned to for many, many centuries.
And prior to that, was there just so much, the activity was so limited that that things weren't disturbed that much?
In the ground, yes. However, in the 30s, I'm not sure what caused it. I don't know if it was a population growth or there was enough people that were concerned about it that they noticed it was happening, but bluff shelters got extremely looted in the 30s, where Sam Dellinger, who was the original founder of the University Museum, I don't know if he noticed it was happening or someone told him that it was happening, but he went out there and just basically collected everything he could find out of bluff shelters, because he knew that I read a site form once that said, it was written in the 60s, but it said, the person that they talked to said that as a kid they used to go in to the bluff shelters and burn the baskets just for fun, and that wasn't necessarily because they just didn't know what they were doing.
Sure.
And so Dellinger went in and in bluff shelters. Just for people that don't know, the organic preservation is extremely, like, amazing. It's extraordinary. Baskets, and there's a dog mummy. I mean, you know, just from being dried out. seeds, textiles, things that, you know, would never, ever survive in the ground. Arrow shafts, you know, you find the arrow point, but you never find the rest of the shaft because it's made out of wood and feathers, or cane and feathers. So the bluff shelters was really the first push of, you know, the concept of preservation. But again, it was kind of just like, go grab it up. It wasn't, and they have the like provenience as far as like what sites they were found at, but not like an organizational way that we do it now. So there was destruction happening, but it wasn't, it was walk inside the bluff shelter and get the stuff as opposed to dig it up.
Sure. As soon as you talked about back in the 30s, I kind of wondered if it went back into the 20s, because you always hear about
possibly
people moonshining.
Yes.
Back in the woods.
That's a good point.
You know, and uh-huh. using those bluff dwellings
that
as
totally
kind of a shelter.
Makes sense. That totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Because people weren't, I mean, I've seen those really, those haulers where people have old homesteads, so they would have been close to bluff shelters, but I bet the majority of people don't want to be that isolated, so maybe they weren't living in those places except to go moonshining. I like that. I like.
Yeah, stay away from the tax man.
So yeah, exactly. And some people listening to this might be like, of course that's how it happened, but I didn't even think of that because I'm so entrenched in like ancient Arkansas that I forget that about what was happening like in Arkansas in the 20th
century.
Well,
I'll get my junior archaeologist badge.
There you go.
All right, well, I'll be back in just a few seconds with more of my interview with Dr. Mel Zabecki, the Arkansas State Archaeologist.
If you're enjoying this podcast, consider a newspaper subscription to the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette or the River Valley Democrat Gazette. We have a special offer for our podcast listeners, so visit nwaonline.com/nwapodcast to get started. You can also click the subscribe button on our websites, nwaonline.com and rivervalleydemocratgazette.com, or call us at 479-684-5509 and be sure to say that you're a podcast listener. Now back to the show.
This is a broad question. What do we know about Arkansas that we wouldn't know if archaeology wasn't actively being done?
On a broad scale, just generally, archaeologists, while they absolutely do study history up until 50 years ago, the historic record started essentially in 1541 when DeSoto came through. And what I mean by the historic record, I mean the written record, right? So indigenous cultures here didn't write down their history. They passed it on through generations. They didn't have a system of writing. When you go to deep time, when you go back 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, all the way back to 14,000 years ago when the first people arrived in Arkansas, there's no written evidence of anything. So there's no written history. Our modern tribes today do have stories and traditions that were maintained. We did have that horrible removal that in the 1800s where the tribes and the nations were kicked out of Arkansas and redistributed and, you know, partially like just exterminated. So a lot of their traditions got lost. Their languages got lost. They were made to, you know, not speak their language. So a lot of stuff got lost. So their own knowledge of their history is at sometimes spotty. With the sort of more recent past, we can help folks learn, we can work with indigenous people and get part of their story and try to incorporate the objects that were found. And say like, this is where this picture came from. It came originally on a piece of pottery or something like that. But when you go deeper back in time, like I said, there's zero memory because the cultural ways and the life ways are so different than even the more, you know, the later history folks. You know, the time period where you've got the hunter-gatherers, the first people here, were traveling in small bands and, you know, just hunting and gathering. They didn't even have farming. Until the woodland period where there were, you know, this farming or horticulture started and they started to leave more artifacts behind because they were more settled and they came up with pottery and all this stuff. So we can learn very much about deep time through archaeology where there's no written stuff before. And then with the historic record, we could also prove things wrong. I don't have a very, very specific example, but I know that there's a lot of folks that are just Civil War buffs, and I don't like war or fighting, so I kind of like zone out when people are talking about this stuff. But I do know that, you know, there's a lot of folks that have the history written down of what, I don't even know the vocabulary, what troop went which way, how they approached this, blah, blah, blah. Well, you can ground truth that and see it in the archaeology to know where all the bullets fell. This is where the line was or something like that. So you can either prove or disprove history.
So what projects, a lot going on in Northwest Arkansas in terms of just life, you know, and growth, population growth and all of that. So what, how is that influencing archaeology?
Well, there's a lot of jobs for those contract archaeologists, so there's constant projects going on. So that's like the good side, right? And we're also learning things as things need to be excavated and moved out of the way when construction happens. However, even a huge archaeological excavation is destroying the site, right? So once you dig something out of the ground, no matter how many records you keep and what exact level in the ground you found it and what type of soil it was found in and where it was according to everything else, you're still destroying the site. So we still, it sounds weird, but we still prefer to leave sites untouched. I don't know, like if we're still here in 500 years, they're gonna have technology that you don't have to disturb the past, you know? And also it's a matter of respecting the descendants. Especially with like burials and stuff, you don't put somebody in the ground thinking someone's going to dig it up 500,000 years later, right?
Sure.
So they were put there for a reason, and it wasn't for us to go find stuff. And so it's good in that it's giving people jobs, and we're learning more about the history. But the construction and all the development is extremely bad for history because, and here's where the government stuff comes in. According to the National Historic Preservation Act, if you have a project that is going to entail any type of federal funding or permits, you have to have an archaeological survey done. Okay, so you have to go assess and evaluate if there are going to be sites impacted by your construction. Okay, federal funding or permits. Guess how much development is private? There are no regulations for private building and private development, except we have some pretty good Arkansas burial laws. It's just that there are so many private developments that just tear through sites. And then when things get opened up, when things get exposed, there are people that are collectors that go out there and take it also. So it vanishes from the historic record because it goes into people's houses and personal collections. So opening up the ground is just inherently risky.
I wanted to talk to you a little bit about what I consider the amateur archaeologist, like any other kind of hobby. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people that are really into that.
Yep.
You know, there are properties up there around Pea Ridge that are privately held that they'll get permission to go on,
yep.
or sometimes
yes.
not get permission to
yes.
go on.
Yes, right.
Or people just going out there, you know, maybe they're looking for mushrooms or,
and
you know, they come across things. So,
sure.
So what, you know, what kind of damage is being done, or are those opportunities for archaeology? I mean, I can't imagine how excited I would be. You mentioned the Civil War, but if I'm out there on a piece of property and I'm just going about my business and somehow I end up seeing a belt buckle
yeah.
that looks like it might be Civil War, it'd be thrilling.
Mm-hmm.
It would,
yes,
you know,
it is.
And
yeah.
and it would be heartbreaking to just leave it there, you know, and
sure,
so what's the harm in that?
I'm an archaeologist, of course I understand the thrill, but you know, as I learned more about archaeology and history, I realized that there are more thrilling, you got to find a new thrilling thing in your life, because if you take that belt buckle, you might be taking the only evidence of the Civil War in that area, or the only evidence of that kind, you know, belt buckles and the epaulets and the buttons and everything, you know, indicated which side you were on, right? They all had their own different kinds of uniforms and uniform hardware. It could be the only evidence of the Union or Confederate soldier being right in that area. And a lot of people say, well, what about all those arrowheads? You know, it's like, oh, we're fishing in the river and we pick up this arrowhead. You know, why wouldn't we? It's just going to get thrown, you know, it's just going to get pushed more further down the river. So I might as well take it home. I understand that. But the thing is that when you take something out of context, you basically lose all of the information from it. Yeah, cool belt buckle, but where did you find it and like what else was around it?
So what should a person do in a situation where they find something that clearly has some archaeological significance and they don't, you know, they want to be responsible?
Yeah, I would love for people to want to be responsible. And by the way, a lot of people are not irresponsible, they're just not educated. They don't know what it happens when you take something, and they also don't know that it could be a federal offense, depending on where you find it. If it's on the Buffalo River, it's a federal offense to take something. You should, if you could, if you would, contact your local archaeologist at the Arkansas Archaeological Survey. So, you know, just...
You don't have a hotline, kind of a bat phone.
Oh man, I wish I did. That would be great. But basically, the survey on our website, it's archaeology.uark.edu, but if you just look up Archaeology Arkansas, you'll get to our page. There's a who are we kind of thing, and there's a map of Arkansas, and you can click on your county, and it'll pop up your person that you need to get in touch with. But if you are on federal property, you get in touch with the person, either law enforcement officer might help, but any of the rangers, there's interpretive rangers on the big parks.
Like, you're talking about like Forest Service people, National Park people.
Yeah, the National Parks and the Forest Service folks. And it's sometimes it's hard to get to them, right? You know, like you're in the middle of the Ozark Highlands Trail and there's no one there, you know?
Yeah.
So what I ask people to do is take a picture, celebrate what they found on Facebook or their social media, but put it back.
Yeah.
I myself find stuff and get excited and take a picture. And then I usually, like, if I'm in the woods, I'll stick it like in a like rotting tree trunk, like so that it gets all wound up in that, like just hide it. If I'm in the river, I whip it as far as I can up onto the bank, hoping that it gets out of the flood zone.
Doesn't that change the historical perspective?
It keeps it closer to where the origination point was. Okay. I know it's flowing down the river. I know.
Yeah.
But it's, again, it could be the only, you know, everybody's like, oh, but there's a million arrowheads. But there are certain types of chert, which is what arrowheads are made out of in spear points. Chert or flint are the same thing. There's certain types that travel across the nation to get here. And to find something that came from somewhere else to indicate a trade route was happening and an ancient relationship between another culture is huge to know, because we have shells or conch shells from the Gulf of Mexico in Arkansas. We have copper from Michigan in Arkansas. And we have chert hoe blades from Mill Creek in like Illinois and stuff. And just to imagine how that stuff traveled here is crazy. So anyway, if you can take pictures and do whatever you want, but if you can leave it there, it would be fantastic.
But if you've got a GPS device,
take a point and take a picture, take a point, a GPS point, send it to whoever you can figure out would be in charge.
So let's talk for just a couple of minutes about archaeological education. I saw, you know, in preparing for this, I saw a lot of use of the term cultural resources management. Mm-hmm. And I read a report the other day that talked about, you know, over the next, you know, decade or so, there's like 11,000 new jobs within that context of cultural resource management, and about 8,000 of those being archaeologists. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that's tied to the new infrastructure bill in terms of the work that'll be, the disruptions, I guess, that will be going on for some of that infrastructure.
Sure.
I mean, tell me what cultural resource management means, and then I wanted to just get into a little bit about, you know, a young person out there today who might be thinking about a career.
Yep.
And we'll get into that.
Sure. Yeah. Well, cultural resource management, we call it CRM, is basically archaeology for compliance. So meaning that whole, you know, National Historic Preservation Act that says federal funding, you got to do the archaeological survey. So people go out and do both historic, they do historic research too, of course, the records research, the deeds, the, you know, what was there on the maps in the 1800s or whatever. But then they go out and dig. And what that entails is that you have an area that you know is going to be affected, right? So, you know, again, for if people are from Northwest Arkansas, think about the Great House Springs. You know that road is going to go through. So the road is going to pull up all that soil because they're going to have to put the base of the road in and all the gravel. Well,
they're basically widening Highway 112 and putting roundabouts. And creating an alternative path to I-49, essentially, yep. North-south
yeah,
path.
Eventually, sure. Yeah, yeah. But the road, you're going to rip up the old road, you're going to put new road in because they're actually moving it over. You're going to also have to place all of your equipment somewhere. The huge things that are going to be like impacting the earth that you have to just use to do the construction. So they call that the area of potential effect or something. There's a whole process that they do to figure out what's going to be affected. And then the CRM firms bid the projects, right? So then the company or the agency or whoever's hiring these archaeologists do the hiring of you know, usually the lowest bid or whatever. And then those archaeologists go out and say, okay, there's this swath. There's this, like, say 400 foot swath of land, and it's going this way. And we have to, basically they do shovel tests every 5 meters. And a shovel test is just, you dig a hole, you look through the dirt. If there's something, then you dig another hole around that closer so you can kind of get site boundaries. If you don't find anything, you fill the hole back up and move over to the next 5 meters. And it's actually quite fun. I've done this, and I did that for years. I was a CRM, we call us shovel bums. We just go, like, I've done pipelines through the Ozark National Forest, and so it's a really cool job. It's very hard because, you know, you have to travel a lot and stuff, and it's pretty hard work. But basically, the CRM folks are the ones that clear the land for the development to happen. So the thing is that there's so much new technology that's really sexy that a lot of college students are either learning really weird niche technology or it's keeping their heads in the computers. Now, of course, we need all that technology, but a lot of students are looking at really small things and not learning, like, the fieldwork aspect, like the big giant, like how archaeology happens. People are starting to lose that traditional path that we used to take, and they're getting into all these, like, little really technological projects, or even doesn't even have to. I don't mean to be bashing on tech, because of course we need that, but just other weird little projects. Like, I watched a PhD. Anyway, I'm not going to name names, but sometimes I watch these PhD defenses, and I'm like, you studied that one bone of a monkey? Like, that's what, no, you got to go out and do you got to figure out the big picture before do this little. So there's a lot of people coming out of into the workforce, or really a lot of people coming out of school. And this is an issue. This is an actual issue that, like, that we have meetings about now. The lack of people that are general field workers.
Yeah.
So because, you know, it's a hard life. You don't make a ton of money. But it's like what we need right now because of all the construction. So we're lopsided right now because we used to have a lot of CRM, and then everybody got fancy, and now we need a lot more CRM people. And so there's that, like I had mentioned when you first asked about development, I said there's a lot of jobs open.
Sure.
Again, it's not, you can't raise a family on that thing though, until you become a higher up field supervisor, but that requires a master's or a PhD. So, you know, regular students that want to just get a bachelor's, you can't really go very far with that, unfortunately. You need to have a master's to get to the higher levels. But we need so many of those shovel bums first.
Yeah.
So, like, bachelor's people, take 5 years off before you go to grad school and go hang out with the CRM people, because we need those folks. Or master's, too.
So what are... What are the characteristics that you would see in someone that would make you think, you really ought to consider archaeology as a path.
Well, to begin with, somebody that wants to work outside, that likes to work outside, that doesn't care about getting dirty and that doesn't want to wear a suit every day and that can travel and be flexible. And that's good because then you get a lot of field experience, and that's important because then when you sit at a desk all day like I do, I have years and years of experiences that I can look back on and use to advise people. And it's hard because I've had a lot of students say, I really want to be an archaeologist, but I have two kids. They don't want to live away from their families. And I, you know, totally understand that. And some people do get very lucky to be able to go get their degrees or whatever and then move back to their hometowns. But that's very rare. You know, you have to be able to pick up and move somewhere. I went from New Jersey to Massachusetts for college, but then I went to Egypt, and then I came to Arkansas, and then I left to go to Kentucky for 2-3 years, and then came back to Arkansas.
It sounds like you have to love it.
It's so much fun in so many ways. Archaeologists are a special breed of people, kind of like geologists, if anybody's out there, because I've been on a couple of geology trips, and they're just as funny as archaeologists. But, you know, we're just a close-knit group of people, and you know, we think digging is cool, but we also really understand that archaeology is under serious threat. And we really need to try to learn as much as we can before it's lost. It's gonna get lost. We can't stop that. But we can try to educate people by not being the people that are making it get lost.
So what do you mean it's gonna get lost?
I mean, development is just gonna keep happening, you know? But if you're on your own land, and if you're building a garden or you're building a building or a barn or whatever you're doing, and you hit, and if you hit something that you think is important, I mean, archaeologists don't have time to go out and check every single thing, but if you know something's there, move over. Like, try to just preserve it for later. And definitely don't open it up on a Facebook page and say, hey, here's 10, you know, if you pay $10, you can come dig up whatever you find here, because that is actually happening.
Wow.
And so it's, yes, the big construction is a big issue, but private individuals that are taking a backhoe into a rock shelter that happens to be on their private property and physically emptying the whole thing and taking all the artifacts out, that is actually happening. And that's, you know, pick up an arrowhead is one thing, but digging through stuff and just rifling through things unscientifically is just, it's just destroying stuff.
Sure.
So,
wow.
It's painful. Mm. So
any last thoughts?
Please contact archaeologists. We're all over the place. And just learn more and teach your kids that, yeah, your collection is cool, but maybe stop collecting. Oh, and I actually do, I know people are gonna still pick stuff up. So what I would like, actually, my final request is, if you do pick stuff up, try to get a GPS point or at least a general location on it and put it in a bag and with a little label that says where you found it, so that in 50 years when you die, your kids are gonna say, what are we gonna do with all this junk? And then you can donate it to a museum or the archaeologists, and it'll have a point location where it's found. The location is so important for where things are found, because if you lose the locational information, it's just another arrowhead. But if you have a specific location, it can really tell a lot about what's going on in the landscape.
And you're talking about specific, very specific, not just I found it in the Washtenaw National Forest.
No. If you can get a GPS coordinate, that'd be fantastic. Yeah, okay. Oh, and by the way, you can't pick up stuff on the Washtenaw National Forest. It's against the law.
Right. Well, thank you so much.
But if you do.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Covered a lot of territory, but yeah. I think it's fascinating. And I hope that, this will inspire some people to not necessarily go be archaeologists, but to have a bit more appreciation for what's out there, what we can learn from it, and just learn more about Arkansas history.
And there is an avocational group of archaeologists called the Arkansas Archaeological Society. We're very closely knit with the survey, but the society is the group of avocational archaeologists that learn with us, and there's about 400 of them. So you can look up the society, and there's chapters all around the state, And we do training programs, and we have annual meetings, and it's a great group of people too, the society. Just regular people without archaeology degrees learning to help do archaeology. So.
All right. Well, we will include a URL with our information that goes along with this podcast so that people can look that up. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. Take care.
So that's it for this edition of Speaking of Arkansas, a production of the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. I'm Greg Harton, your host. Until next time, so long.